This is Wells Tech, episode 648, recorded on Thursday, February 11th, 2021. Luck is the residue of design. Wells Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 648, and we're recording on February 11th, 2021. My name is Martin Spriggs, and the show about technology and ministry. Joining me, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you today?
I am excellent, Martin, but my week is all thrown off. We're recording on a Thursday. What's up with
Thursday.
That?
Yeah, I don't know. Life gets in the way, stuff, duty calls. So good thing we have that flexibility and the fact that people can listen to this anytime they want is a blessing to us. So I think we can do it, though.
We'll see. We'll see how Thursday recording goes.
Right. On the show today, we've got actually had really been blessed over the past few weeks with some dynamite interviews. The way our interviews work is kind of by chance or divine intervention, or I'm not sure exactly how it works, but they just kind of happen where we have a conversation with somebody, or we get an email, or we get a recommendation, and we try and schedule a 15-minute chat. With different interesting people in ministry situations, and they tell us about what they're doing. And that is the case today. And a friend of the show, Justin Liebert, did join us for a little conversation. He is an instructor at Wisconsin High School here in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee area. And he is in charge of the live streaming stuff and very excited about it because they just went through a major upgrade. And I thought this would be a timely topic, Sally, because, boy, live streaming seems to be on the lips and, you know, in the budgets of a lot of different congregations these days.
Yeah, definitely. And Wisconsin Lutheran High School has a pretty large facility. They're trying to do a lot of different things there. Obviously, be able to live stream from their main auditorium, which is a very nice location for different events and worship services and all kinds of things. But then they have classroom needs and I assume sports needs and things too. And so Justin is new to the faculty there, but inherited an existing kind of infrastructure with technology that made for some interesting decisions for them.
Yep. So let's have a listen to that conversation we had with Justin.
Joining us today on Wells Tech, Justin Liebert from WISCO, Wisconsin Lutheran High School in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Welcome, Justin. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. I'm excited to talk about cameras today.
All right. Well, that's awesome because we're excited to talk to you about cameras. Before we jump into some of the hardware and software goodness that you've got in store for us, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit of history, and get our audience a little bit reacquainted with Justin. You've been on the show before, so.
Sure. Like you said, I am a teacher here at Wisconsin Lutheran High School in Milwaukee. This is my first year down in Milwaukee. I've served previously as technology director at Winnebago Lutheran Academy in Fond du Lac. I've been doing the tech side of theater and performance venues for probably close to 15 or 20 years through high school and college and grade school. And this is, I think, the fourth or fifth camera system I've installed in that time, and I'm excited that I get to use it every day, and use it to share the message of God's word here at WISCO.
Awesome. Now, 15 or 20 years, that's a long time. Probably 15, 20 years ago, it was hopefully a lot more painful than it is today. You just went through the process again, and it sounds like you're really excited about what you got going there.
Yeah, I was thinking back, actually. I remember doing video editing in my parents' living room with the video camcorder and the VCR and hitting stop and record and stop and record. Yeah. And you know, I was thinking, wow, we've come quite a long way since then.
Exactly. So tell us a little bit about kind of the basics of what you had and the need to replace it. You know, maybe start there with kind of a little bit of the backstory.
Sure. We had a system that was made by a company called Vadio. It was a kind of an interesting system. It looked like it was kind of a proprietary system for Vadio. We had, I think it was about 15 years old when it decided to die. We had a big power surge in the building and it killed off the main controller. So we were kind of faced with the decision as to, do we try to replace this controller, get it fixed, or do we replace the whole system? The system was slated to be replaced this summer anyway, so we figured instead of sticking some money into this old system just to rip it out in a couple months, we decided to kind of hastily, but with a lot of planning still, replace the entire system. It would also kind of help that Vadio doesn't really seem to be making this system anymore. They got bought out, and it looks like they're now making like mostly conference room systems, which really wouldn't work in a 940-seat auditorium. So
you're part of the process, and you mentioned theater in the past. Is that one of the main goals, is that you be able to video record, or is it more on the streaming side just in general? Or,
well, we're thinking for theater. We could, now that is one interesting thing that the pandemic has brought to the theater world, is we could, a lot more companies are willing to let you stream live theater. But we do stream all of the events in our auditorium. So any sort of concert or performance that we can legally stream, at least, does get sent out to the internet. So it's not just a daily chapel service, but it is all sorts of things that people around the world watch, because we have a large international student population. So trying to make sure that we provide quality content for our immediate family, our alumni, and for those people around the world who might just happen to tune in.
So let's get to the hardware and the selection process. What led you to the selection you made, and what did you choose?
We ended up going with an NDI system. So NDI seems to be a relatively new protocol. We picked that because the Vadio system we had only had Ethernet lines running to the different cameras. So each camera had used two Ethernet lines for control and power and signal. And getting kind of using a more traditional camera system, we figured we would have had to do some cabling. And it wasn't something that we really wanted to do during the middle of the school year. And we ended up picking some Sony SRG X400 cameras. They were in stock. They had some options that we liked, most notably the ability to upgrade to 4K just with a license. They've got the 4K sensor in them. It's just not turned on until you pay Sony their little fee. So we figured they're a little bit more future-proof in that way. And they can be powered via PoE. So we didn't have to do any sort of cabling. We just swapped the mount, put the camera on, plugged it in, and it was working. So those were the cameras we ended up with. We also, in our system, when we were doing research, we found NDI is kind of a processor hog. So we ended up buying a computer that had an i9 processor in it. We were looking at servers and desktops. And since we use the Livestream Studio platform, Livestream Studio recommends the i series processor. So I found the beefiest i series processor I could, and it's doing pretty well. The third thing,
Go ahead.
The third thing we put in, we found an NDI PTZ controller from a company called Bird Dog. We were looking at Sony's one, and Sony's one was quite expensive. But then we found this company, Bird Dog. I think they're out of Australia, and they have a whole line of NDI products that are really really amazing. And we got their controller, and those are the three major components of our system.
Very interesting. Just, I think NDI, correct me if I'm wrong, I think was a newer protocol built out by NewTek, which was probably the original company that was in, that jumped into the live streaming business with a TriCaster, which is what we started with at the Synod office and then moved on to live stream. So it sounds like the, one of the big benefits of NDI is kind of a reduction in cabling. So you kind of run everything over that, that NDI cable, which would allow for PTZ control, but also transmission of audio and video.
Yep, and power. I couldn't believe I spent hours and hours and hours of my life setting up and down cameras, as I'm sure you have as you hit the road with streaming for Synod, and just the
daisy chaining and all that stuff.
You don't plug in that one cord, and that was it. I couldn't believe it.
Does that increase your length then too from termination point?
I think the ones that we have still list the standard Cat6 cable length, so 300 meters.
Okay.
So we were able, all of our three runs are under that, so we had no problem. I haven't tried it with anything longer than that, so we'll see.
Okay. Now, you had asked me about streaming services that the Synod had or relationships with. What did you finally decide, or have you decided what kind of streaming you're going to do?
We have been making use of live stream here at Wisco for a long time, it seems. Mm-hmm. So we ended up using the live stream studio software. We did go back and forth a little bit with using OBS. OBS does have a bunch of NDI plugins that would work, but we ended up with live stream since it's a little bit more polished of a program and we're paying for it. So we also did talk about vMix, but the license got a little bit pricey as we started to add on all of the things that we wanted. So.
Sure. And how many cameras did you put in place? This would be a pretty large order auditorium you're trying to cover, I'm thinking.
So we have three that are installed, and we have four, or we have a fourth one that can move around a little bit. One of the neat things that we did, one of the reasons that we went with NDI was NDI had, and we're excited to play with this functionality in the future, but NDI has these really neat apps for the iPhone and Android. So I can turn any of our students' phones into an NDI input. We can put them on a tripod for concerts. And we're thinking the computer up top can handle close to 15 or 20 inputs if we really push it.
Interesting. So is that, do you think this is a solution that has some legs in smaller organizations, a church or a school? What's your assessment on that level? You haven't talked about budget yet, but what do you think?
Sure. I think that there were a lot of rather inexpensive ones. I mentioned the company Bird Dog before. Mm-hmm. Bird Dog had quite a few NDI cameras that were not terribly expensive. NewTek, which you mentioned before, again, also were rather inexpensive. But the other thing too that I had just said, you can use NDI for so many different things. You can make an iPhone into one. You can make a little capture card for one. Get a little capture card for a normal camera, and it can save. I think it can save a lot of that time and energy that you spend using some of those older protocols. Or you know, it's something too. You can find things and swap things in and out, and you don't have to be locked into Sony's control or Panasonic's control or whichever company that you might be using. Mm-hmm.
What about portability? So you've got this kind of wired in to your auditorium. You have other streaming needs, I'm assuming, there at the school. How do you account for that kind of stuff?
Well, we have, like I said, we have one camera that can go from room to room. Mm-hmm. We also put in a camera. We're going to move one of the cameras. We haven't moved it yet, actually, but we'll move it so that we can take the screw off of the mount and take it off and move it. We're also excited to try to use some of those. We were looking at some Mevo cameras to supplement in other rooms as well. We also have, thanks to COVID, we have a bunch of the Logitech Rally systems throughout our building. And we were looking at ways you can use Microsoft Teams to capture the video coming from those Rally systems and send it as an NDI input into any device that can capture NDI. So that's how we're looking forward to experimenting with it. It's going to be a challenge, but it's going to be fun when we can finally have people back in the building with the capabilities that we would have to stream things out now.
I'm thinking that you were a kid who liked Lego blocks, because it all just kind of builds and morphs, and it sounds like very versatile.
It's going to be fun. I'm hoping we can do a couple things. I've got a couple seniors that are really into cameras and streaming, and they are really excited to try different things, and we might mess around with it even if we can't have a concert in our building before they graduate. So we'll see how it goes.
Very good. Justin, thank you so much for sharing with us. I'm assuming that if somebody were interested, you'd be willing to be had as far as a contact and provide some of your experiences if asked.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome. Great. Blessings on your work there. And hopefully that new system is just exactly what you need. And hopefully this was helpful for our listeners as well. Thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Justin for taking some time out of his schedule. He is justifiably excited about some of the things they've put in place there. And it sounds like they're set for certainly the immediate, but maybe the long-term future with some of the tools that they put in, and some good recommendations, I think, for anybody.
Yeah, definitely. Check out the Wells Tech show notes at wellstech.wells.net, because we have a lot of links to include to the different things that Justin mentioned. I really got schooled. I wasn't familiar with NDI and all its capabilities, mm-hmm. the fact that you can use that one Ethernet cable to send everything, and that's exciting how it worked out for them to use what they have existing.
Yeah, makes this a little more approachable, I think. Once you've got a little bit of knowledge, some of this you can install yourself, and pretty cost effective as well. So take advantage of that. Hopefully that was helpful to some of our listeners. One thing that we've been doing here over the winter is doing a book review. And the book that we've chosen is obviously, and I shouldn't say obviously, but if you know us, it probably is, quarantine related. That seems to be the topic du jour. And the book is called The Post-Quarantine Church by Tom Rainer. And we went through a few chapters the last time we looked at the book, and it's kind of an interesting book. It's a quick read. It's actually a book that I'm going through with our church council at Peace here in Hartford. And they, we're just starting it this week. Actually, our next meeting is we're going to take the first couple chapters. So this review has helped me. I've read it a couple times now. It's helped me kind of get my arms around some of the key concepts of what a church maybe ought to be talking about, at least just kind of discussion points. He puts them in the framework of challenges and opportunities, the author, and it's just kind of a good book to kind of frame the conversation, is the way I would put it. And we are on chapters 3, 4, and 5. Chapter 3, reconnect with the community near your church. Chapter 4, take prayer to a new and powerful level. And chapter 5, rethink your facilities for emerging opportunities. And while not every chapter is going to have specific technology focus, I think technology is a big part of the post-quarantine church, at least in my mind. And I think even during the quarantine, obviously, technology was. We've talked to many people who have leveraged technology. But now, what does that mean post-quarantine once we've got COVID in our rearview mirror?
Yeah, and I think an underlying theme throughout the book, and something that the author, I believe, would say is fundamental to looking at this topic, is the fact that things aren't going back to normal. That there's been a lot of people say, I can't wait till we get back to normal. And I was thinking about that, Martin. Normal is Christmas Eve service, and they ask you to scoot closer together on your pew so that they mm-hmm. can fit more people in the right. already packed church and stuff. And maybe it'll be a long time before we get back to that kind of normal, if ever, or whatever. But definitely new opportunities as we come out of this pandemic. And I think one of the things that he's emphasizing in these chapters is that there was definitely a halt of activities. And I think everybody mm-hmm. that's listening, church and school, would say our calendars used to be a lot fuller, and we were busy doing activities, doing things. There was groups meeting and all kinds of things. And when the pandemic hit, we just had to go down to the bare bones. We were happy that we got to see the live stream of the worship service. That was enough, you know, and then we began to grow again from there. And rather than immediately jumping back into filling our facilities and our time with a lot of activities, we can be more intentional as we regain our footing after the lifting of this pandemic mm-hmm. challenges.
Yeah, that was really one of the main points of that third chapter, reconnecting with the community. He felt that there was some lessons learned in this process. You mentioned one of them is that the church really isn't necessarily meant to be activity driven. And in many cases, our churches had kind of defined themselves as kind of the activities that they do, the certain gatherings and the things on the calendar. And obviously that couldn't happen to the same degree, you know, in the pandemic. So there were things that kind of a reawakening of the fact that the church is not just for itself, that it's not in existence in isolation or in a vacuum, but it is part of a community. And the ability to serve your community is kind of paramount to the existence of the church. Serve it in many ways. Obviously, there are ways that you can serve it, and that gets into a little bit of chapter four, where you can maybe leverage your facilities to open it up to the community. But I thought one of the quotes here is interesting. It says, "Remember, our churches are in communities for a reason," and that makes a lot of sense to me. God has planted your church there. Not so that you can just gather the faithful day in and day out, and the facilities can be used for their activities, but it is to reach out, and you have to obviously be aware of who is in your community to do that.
Yeah, I like the book because it gives you a wide breadth of experiences. So this mm-hmm. author has people, you know, quotes people from West Coast, from Florida, from the Midwest, all over the place. And everybody's doing different things. And it doesn't mean that you need to do all the things they're talking about, but it gets you really thinking. And, you know, there was an example where they said to be part of their community, they went as a church and bought gift cards from local small businesses mm-hmm. to support them and to let them know that they're praying for them and things like that, you know, just to begin to make those inroads. It reminded me, Martin, of an effort that Wells is doing that I've read about recently, where our Christian Aid and Relief group has partnered with our home missions group, and they've granted some funding to our home mission congregations to do some community outreach, exactly like what's, you know, are very similar mm-hmm. to the kind of things that are described in the book. And I know one home mission down in Houston, Texas, I want to say they supported the community perhaps through the businesses and the local chamber of commerce somehow doing things with the businesses. And I'm at a loss for the exact details, but there are articles out there, and we'll find a link and put it in the show notes. But again, just begin to think about how you can be more a part of the community.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting parts about these chapters as well is not so much the fact that there is, you know, ways that the church corporately can reach to the community, but the importance of individual ministries. And that was never more apparent than during the pandemic, is maybe you connected with neighbors or people that you really hadn't met or hadn't interacted much before because there was a pandemic, which is kind of almost counterintuitive, but it in some respects drew us closer together because there was a common enemy mm-hmm. and there was an opportunity to increase our prayer ministry. There was a suggestion, an example of One Church handwriting notes to community neighbors, you know, people that maybe they didn't necessarily know, but the handwritten notes with an invitation to send prayer requests to a certain email address so that they're offering or introducing themselves in a very non-threatening way, in a very personal way, saying, hey, we are here to serve the community and we want to pray for you. What can we pray about? And then you have an immediate connection if they're taking advantage of that. In this particular example, they had hundreds of emails coming into that email address for their prayer ministry.
That's awesome. Yeah. Another example in the book was just walking through the neighborhood and praying for the houses, the people in the homes mm-hmm. that are there, and maybe leaving them a little door hanger that says, we're praying for you or whatever. You know, I could relate to this one too, Martin. It's strange, but we all just felt that need to reach out and support one another. We live in an apartment complex, and I can remember putting little post-it notes on our neighbor's door saying, if you need help, let us know, mm-hmm. you know, and, the opportunities are just there. Just show, let your light shine and do it corporately, but also individually, like you said.
Right. Chapter 4 was all about prayer, so I touched on that a little bit. There was an interesting quote. They interviewed a gal named Maureen, and one of her quotes I thought was interesting, so I wrote it down here. For most of my life, I viewed the church as a bunch of religious activities. I went to church more out of obligation than anything else. Now I realize more and more I am the church, at least a part of it. And that was kind of her realization that she had a personal ministry, that church wasn't necessarily about the building or even necessarily the gathering, although that's an important part of Christians helping Christians. But she had a personal ministry to reach out, to share her faith, to help others, and so on and so forth. And that was kind of I think that will be something that all of our churches should be aware of, that they're this ministry that we have is not left up to the pastor or not left up to the church leadership to create programs, but it is us. It is each individual.
And this is a place where we can put in a plug for technology. Mm-hmm. Technology certainly supports that. In the book, he likens it to the Roman roads that helped to spread the gospel in the early centuries of the Christian church. And certainly, if the pandemic had hit us 10, 15, 20 years ago, there would have been no Zoom, no Facebook groups,
total isolation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so thank God for the technology that we do have and continue to be creative and use it to share the good news and offer mm-hmm. that support.
And finally, the last chapter, Rethink Your Facilities for Emerging Opportunities. Again, he highlights the importance of being a part of the community. He says, unfortunately, the Great Commission has become the Great Omission, where a lot of our churches have been kind of private clubs, where you must be a member to be able to take advantage of some of the things that they offer, especially related to the facilities. And some of our churches have great facilities, in fact, very underutilized facilities. When you think of how many hours in a particular day a piece of that facility is used or not used, many of our churches have, you know, very low utilization rates. So is there something that you could think of that could be used or those facilities could be used for that might benefit the community and then obviously introduce the community to what you do? So it's important. And he recommends it here too. Do a demographic study. They offer one. There are others that you can purchase or that are free as well. To know who is in your community. We often do that in our home missions group to determine where we plant churches. Know your community, and that can drive ministry decisions.
Yeah, the example that sticks out to me was someone who realized how many single mothers were in their community and mm-hmm. how they must have an overwhelming need for childcare assistance and things like that, you know, yep. and just know what's happening around you. And I also like the example where he mentioned people have a need to gather, and maybe your gymnasium or large fellowship hall could be an opportunity for you to allow gatherings where people are struggling to find a place to allow for the proper social distancing and things, but yet still gather for specific reasons. So lots of mm-hmm. good ideas there.
Yeah. One thing that occurred to me, and we've talked about it on the show, maybe not recently, but we have, is that your Google Analytics, if you've got that hooked up to your website, can really inform you about your website visitors. And if people are visiting your website or how they're finding your website is can be very informational. So if they're searching on daycare or preschool or senior program or singles ministry or whatever, and that's how they're coming to your website, the search term that they might have used, that can be helpful too to determine how are people finding us, what are they looking for, and potentially inform ministry decisions too. So,
smart thinking.
All right, the Post-Quarantine Church, Tom Rainer, that's chapters 3, 4, and 5. We're going to finish up this in a future episode. There's, again, I mentioned it is a short book. There's only another chapter and then a conclusion. We'll wrap that up in later here in February. So if you want to grab the book, it's cheap, it's short, and again, it's filled with... He's a consultant, so he talks to a lot of different churches, obviously not all Lutheran churches, but I thought it interesting that one of the references here was a Wisconsin church. I don't know if it was Lutheran or not, but I think in general, churches face some of the same challenges post-COVID. So take a look. All right, Sally, should we move along?
Yep, I'm ready for my pick of the week. I'm super excited.
Okay, take a swing.
Well, I'm super excited because it's a mobile app that partnered with the NBA, and I'm so into basketball. Play it all the time. Okay, so not really, but the mobile app is called Home Court. You can find out more about it at homecourt.ai. And basically, it was developed in partnership with the NBA to help with your basketball skills. So to help you practice different basketball skills, the concept of the app is that you set up your phone or iPad. And I will say it is an iOS app. There isn't an Android app at this time, although I found some kind of kludgy ways to get an Android version. I don't know how above board those are. But anyway, if you set up your iPhone or iPad so that its video camera can see you. It gives you kind of an augmented reality. So as you look at the camera, you see, for instance, spots that you need to reach out and touch at different heights. And I'm doing that right now. And if y'all could see me, you'd see how silly I look. But whatever. you basically can do the drills or some of the drills without even bouncing or dribbling a basketball. It's just more of your dexterity and your reaction times and things like that that it's drilling you on. Maybe there's a cone that you have to kick, and they're off to the side. I saw one activity where there was a square on the screen in different locations, and you needed to get your body inside that square. So if it was off the ground, you had to jump to get your body in the square. Or if it was down low, you had to squat really low to get your body in the square. But basically, you're doing these drills by watching your screen and reacting to it. And what caught my eye was it was actually in an ed tech blog post about teachers doing the Home Court app and challenging their students to do the Home Court app. So it's basically a way to get in your exercise in a kind of a fun, creative way. And it'll time you and give you statistics on how well you did, how many goals you achieved, that kind of thing. And so there can be kind of a competitive thing if you track that, say, for all the students in your class and have them do it as an activity or whatever. So definitely check out the links to the different articles. I even found a school that has a team effort kind of set up so you can see how they did it with their students. If you're in maybe an iPad one-to-one situation, this would definitely be something that you could challenge your students to. So check out the Home Court app, and some of the fun videos and things in the blog post give you more of an idea of how it works besides not being able to see me demonstrate it on an audio show. So check it out.
It'll be interesting. I think this year, next year, we're going to start seeing a lot more virtual reality, augmented reality, mixed reality type solutions, not just in educational spaces, but all over. I think a couple episodes ago, we talked or shared some feedback from Rob Gunther about some virtual reality stuff that they are doing. And I know there's a little group now of pastors talking about that. Interesting stuff. These next couple of years will be interesting to watch where that all goes.
It's a whole new creative sphere that we're going to explore and push the limits with, I'm sure. So
gone are the days of Google Class or cardboard.
Yeah,
right?
I remember when I got my cardboard.
Yeah, we're beyond that. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
All right. My pick of the week is actually more informational. And I guess there is a pick in here, but not too many days ago, Google announced that they're killing an extension that I was using, the Great Suspender, it was called. I think it was maybe even a pick of mine a while back.
I think it was.
Basically, what it does is it monitors your use of open tabs. And if you're not using them, it kind of puts them to sleep. And that does one major thing, and that is it reduces the energy and the computing power necessary to run what's in that tab. Chrome has had a long history of being a memory hog, and to suspend these tabs from operating while you're not using them or while they're not open or active can save some of that memory and computing power. And then when you revisit or reopen the tab, then it kind of springs back to life and it reloads the page. Turns out that the Great Suspender was, I think, sold or a new developer took over or a new company and introduced some malware into the application or the extension. So that's what made news, and that's what caused or prompted Chrome or Google to suspend the Great Suspender. It's no longer available as an extension, which is kind of sad. But that made me look around for other similar tools, and there are some similar ones in Chrome. Partizan is one, Session Buddy, one tab they list in this article that we'll share. But I'm not using Chrome as much anymore since I've been using Edge, and I talked about that on a previous show too, which uses the Chrome engine under the hood, but has some other niceties that I've been enjoying, including some nice screen capture tools and collections. And Edge, the latest Edge, has that kind of functionality of suspending unused or under-visited tabs called sleeping tabs. Again, it's only in Microsoft Edge, but I believe it's now built in to the settings menu. So if you go to settings and then system, you may have to turn a flag on, and we'll include that in the show notes in this article. But it allows you to turn this feature on, and then you can set. There are just very basic settings to this. You can say how many minutes or hours of inactivity before they sleep a tab, and then you can also put some tabs on the do not sleep list. So those that you never want to go to sleep because they don't play well, or you go back to them, you know, frequently enough that you really don't want to wait the 2 or 3 seconds that it takes to have them spring back to life. So you can add those to the white list, so to speak. So this is all totally free, and I think a good practice. If especially you have a lot of tabs that could degrade the performance of your computer or of your browser, if you've got crashes, that might be one of the reasons. And so this might be something that you would take a look at. So that is sleeping tabs in Microsoft Edge. Again, this has to be the latest version, I believe, of Microsoft Edge for this to be available to you. But it's worth the price of admission.
Good stuff. You could just like not have so many tabs open. That's another option, just saying.
That's true. But I usually don't have a lot of tabs open, but I do like good tab hygiene anyway. So let's move on to ministry resources. This one I put on the board this week, Sally. And it came from a number of questions from the field about Final Web, which is our web hosting partner. If somebody says, well, where should I host my website? I would normally say, well, we have a great relationship with the folks at Final Web. They are a company that kind of sprung out of a church ministry and kind of went out on their own. So they kind of get churches. Many of our Wells churches use the Final Web solution. Oh, a number of years ago, Final Web launched their 2.0 product, which is a new and improved mobile-first, mobile-friendly solution. Many of our churches and organizations who use it haven't made that jump to 2.0, but there is no reason not to. It's very tried and true, and I think you'd like the new features that are available to you and the nice new looks that are available as well. Obviously, they're putting more of their energy into the templates for 2.0 rather than anything that's going into 1.0. What I had forgotten about, however, and this is the resource, is that there is a YouTube playlist of some instructional videos. There's one key one that says build a church website in 13 minutes. So it kind of gives you the quick and easy, down and dirty, so to speak, way to get your website up and running. And then there's other videos that talk about different aspects of it. So that would be my ministry resource, especially for those who use Final Web, if you want to kind of go to that 2.0. Also be aware that if you are maybe struggling and aren't sure quite how to do that, Final Web is very ready, willing, and able to help you, assist you. Just to contact their support department, and depending on your situation, they may even set up a couple pages for you to get you started. So we have a super relationship with those guys and really appreciate all that they've done for our churches. So that is our ministry resource of the week.
Yeah, and I'll just tag team onto that a little bit. There is a button in the site manager area if you're still on Final Web 1.0. You can push a button and it will convert your site. It's maybe not the cleanest conversion, but it doesn't replace your existing site. It only makes it a new site that you can work on, and then you can contact Final Web and say, okay, switch to that site, point my domain to that new site. But you get a starting point with the 2.0, and then you can tweak it and refine it to be what you want it to look like and stuff. But it's a great feature to just get at least started, so you don't reinvent the wheel. You have your regular website still exists, but the content is kind of recreated in this 2.0 world, and it's really, really a great way to get started. So,
yep. And because we started with live streaming at the top of the show with our Justin interview, I just want to make a mention that Final Web does have live streaming services, so to speak, available in their product. It is not free, does not come along with your initial subscription, but for a fee, they do have live streaming, which is nicely integrated with the package. They recently updated it, and they're going to put some new videos out about, you know, how best to use it. One of the nice things I would suggest about using that service is you don't have to kind of fight with YouTube, especially with takedown notices, copyright notices. You still obviously should abide by copyright law, but I've got many calls over the last many months here, certainly during the pandemic, about Google in particular, dinging them, or YouTube dinging them, because they felt that something that they played was copyrighted, even though you had the appropriate copyright permissions. You won't necessarily run into that using this particular service. So I'm going to take a look at that if you're interested in doing that. Good service. Sally, I think we're up to community feedback.
And we have a lot of interesting things to share. There's been a lot of discussion out there. First up, we'll start with Pastor James Winterstein, who's at Pilgrim in Mesa, Arizona. He reached out looking for a way to post the Wells Daily Devotion on his church Facebook page. And immediately I was reminded that there was a conversation about this in the Wells Intersections group, which is a Facebook group of people that ask and answer technology-related questions in particular. And so I gave him a link to that, and I'll throw that link in the show notes if you're wondering about the same thing. Basically, Staff Minister Jason Petoskey had asked that question and gotten a lot of great feedback. And he is actually using two services to do it. He uses Deliverit It's dlvrit.com. And he says that program's free.
dlvr.it, I think, right?
Right. No. Actually, yes, you are correct. It also resolves to a deliverit.com address.
You have to with that spelling, yeah.
Yeah. So he says that program's free and allows you to post 3 times per day. If you want to post more, the account would need to be upgraded for a small fee or to a pro account. When he does the posting with that program, he gets the pictures in a good format. But he also makes use of If This Then That, which is ifttt.com. And he says, again, you can set up the RSS feeds that you want to use. It doesn't have any limits. So if you needed to do more than 3 that are free with Deliverit, you could have this as another alternative. But then it kind of skews the images with the daily devotion posts that he's posting. So there's pluses and minuses to both tools, and he's kind of using them in both in conjunction with one another. So that was Jason's recommendation after all of the discussion on the Wells Intersections page. So maybe you're in the same position. We have links we can share to the Wells RSS feeds, and hopefully that assistance will get you posting those devotions and other resources on your Facebook page. All right, moving on. We, I think, have mentioned this in a previous show, but Chromebook licensing is increasing. The date for that is March 9th, so coming up pretty soon, the individual license for Chromebook, which allows you to put them under your school EDU account, basically with Google, is going up from $30 per license to $38 per license. And just in a very timely manner, our friend Chris Hunt, who works for Trox, had shared some information with Wells school administrators about how the licensing prices are changing and things like that. Also, the fact that Chromebooks are going to be in high demand again for the coming school year, so it's probably best to get your Chromebook orders in as early as possible to ensure that you have new Chromebooks on hand as needed when the school year starts in August. And then finally, a different topic, interactive flat panels was part of his the information that he shared. And he says smart boards are nearing the end of life and replacements are typically interactive flat panels now. And they have a partnership with a company called Newline. They have these different panels available. 65-inch ones are $1,600. 75-inch ones are $2,000. And these flat panels come with a 5-year warranty and wall mounting and wireless capabilities, all that kind of stuff. So we can share more details in the show notes and certainly share Chris Hunt's contact information if that's something you'd like more information about.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thanks to Chris for pushing that out. I think he is certainly a friend of our schools, worked with many of them, and this information is really super timely.
Definitely. All right. Next up, we heard, actually, Martin, I think you were going to say this name. Mark.
Mark Salswedel.
Thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate that. I didn't want to mess it up.
I can say it because we have a Salswedel in our as one of the teachers in our school.
Excellent. All right. So Mark is at Christ Lutheran Church in Eden Prairie, Minnesota, I believe. Is that right? Yes. And he wrote to us with 2 questions. One was, he's curious if we know of anyone working on online Bible classes along the lines of Coursera. He's really wanted to work on something like that to supplement traditional Bible studies and just interested in getting it on phones and for young people to have access and things like that. And in that regard, we were able to point Mark to our recent interview with, and I'm drawing a blank now, he's out in Colorado. I'm going to click my link.
I wish I could help you.
Yeah, it was Pastor Jared Oldenburg, and at the time, seminary senior Micah Kelpine had collaborated on an online Bible information class using the Thinkific platform. And we got a little glimpse into that, and it looked really exciting. So you can listen to episode 621 to get caught up on that. And Micah has since graduated and is now Pastor Micah Kilpeen. So that was his senior project, I think, at the seminary. And then the second question that Mark asked was about any experts on social media advertising, getting beyond just the basics of an online presence and more targeted online advertising campaigns. And again, we have a recent Wells Tech episode, episode 641, where we interviewed Brian Pulfer, who had done that kind of thing for their school, Carlsbad Christian Academy, the school ministry of Beautiful Savior Lutheran Church in Carlsbad, California. And Brian had some excellent resources. He had actually written up a document with everything they had done around their advertising to the community, and recommended some books and different things there as well. So definitely check that out if you have similar questions.
Sally, it's almost uncanny how we sometimes can schedule topics that are of interest to our listeners.
Let's see. Uncanny, and I think at the beginning of the show you said the interviews just happened and fell in our lap. Actually, right. It's a lot of work, Martin. Let's be real. And we are blessed to
There's some kind of saying about that. I'll come up with it later, but yes.
All right. Okay, finally, wrapping up community feedback. I mentioned earlier Wells Intersections, a very busy Facebook group with all kinds of conversations around technology, communication, all kinds of topics related to church. And one that I caught my eye recently was on a discussion about church merch or merchandise, having your congregation's name on your t-shirts or cozies for your cans or whatever it may be. And I'll definitely include a link to that conversation if you guys want to read other people's thoughts on that. And then a couple of different stores that they shared links to so you can see what other churches are doing in that space. One quote I thought that was particularly interesting from Paul Workentine. He says, "We give members t-shirts with our logo on the front, our church logo, and the word forgiven printed on the back, just for the purpose of community awareness." So you've got all your members wearing these at various times in the community. I think that's a great great outreach tool right there. So lots of good ideas over on Wells Intersections. If you aren't part of that group, certainly you can join it on Facebook. And that's going to wrap up community feedback.
Very good. Found the quote I was looking for. "Luck is the residue of design," originally from John Milton. It's kind of the way we work. We try and design it, and then out pop some happy circumstances.
Many blessings, for sure.
Yep, absolutely. God's watching over us. Speaking of God watching over us, He watches over Wells, of course, and our ministry, and He certainly blesses it. One of those neat things I think that's happened over the last year or so is a series called Marriage Moments, and that's put out by our adult discipleship group, Don Doberstein. Have we had Don on before? If we haven't, we should, to talk about this. But the reason I put it in Wells now is that we recently added it to the Wells app. If you're not familiar with the Wells app, just go to wells.app on your mobile phone and you can install it right there. It's a progressive web app. It includes the daily devotion, which we just talked about, Bible and 3-year readings, call lists, all kinds of news, other devotional material, family devotions, military devotions, etc. And now Marriage Moments. So these are videos, short videos for couples that are now available right within the app. So as they come out, they'll be listed there, and you can view all the old ones as well. So go to wells.app and check that out.
Good stuff.
All right, the hit parade does not stop with this episode, Sally. The next time we meet, another great interview. Pastor Kent Reeder and Dan Jasperson join us to talk about a brand new network they're starting, and I think you'll be interested to learn some of the innovative things that they're doing and hope to do. And of course, wrapping up our post-quarantine church book review. That is going to about do it today. I hope this was a blessing to you. Share this and bring a friend next time. Thank you for joining us. Bye.